Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
These fans are out, rolled off his stick. Here's a breakaway opportunity. Moving up ice. Yop, moving in. Fakes backhander. Scores! Puck around the far corner. Kept him to the near point again. Clegg moves in, takes a shot. Scores! Off the left side, Clegg. As that swept in on goal by Yop. Back at the right point. Another shot in. They score! Yop gets a tip in front. Shot from about top of the slot.
It's been good, but, you know, I think that the team played unbelievable this series. You know, I think this is the best team. I haven't been watching for 25 years, but I'm sure it's one of the better teams that have been here in a long time. So, credit to the group. A shout out to team accomplishment. So it's been a great few games.
Team defense propels the Amerks into the next round. They'll await the winner of Laval and Cleveland. And, of course, last night in the NHL, the Kings, the Sens, and the Wild were bounced from the playoffs. Welcome in with Marty. I'm Brian. Nice, to say the least, result for Devon Levi and company as they blank Syracuse over the last two and a half games, essentially, in the three-game series.
The team played unbelievably well in the game two and game three. And yes, Devon Levi, I feel, was in the zone. But you win game one, which that's what you needed to do. You're at home. You win game one. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, this is going to be a long series. And Syracuse is a really mature type of team that you're going to have to grind through it. And they were able to not only the Rochester Americans grind through game two and game three. They did it without giving up a goal in Rochester game two, in Syracuse game three. It was about as perfect as you can get. And the growth there has been different. We know last year they lost to Syracuse. The year before that, they went to five-game series in overtime. Like, it's taken a long time for Rochester to be able to say, we figured it out a little bit. But Michael Leone and the guys that have had that experience have figured it out, and it's really nice to see that they were able to do it in a really convincing way yesterday.
Help me out. What do you mean figured it out? Because they won 2 years ago and they lost last year.
Yeah, so, but they figured it out early, like to go
so
early.
I feel like they've been on the right path here.
Figured it out in a short matter. Like, you know, that's important to be able to say, hey, you know what? Like, we're not going to go five games and go through the rigors of this battle. If we're going to do it, let's do it close there. Because the last 2 years, like, it stretched out a little bit. Yes, they beat them 2 years ago. And the last couple of years, they've gone far. But when you play five games and then you go another long series, it adds up on the miles. To be able to go three right now, get a break, because Laval and Cleveland are basically just starting their series.
Yeah, but they could be done Sunday. So
they could, but it could also be a little longer. You're getting a break. Even if it's done Sunday, you're not starting until next week. You don't just go into it 3 days later. You have a week, potentially, maybe even longer. That's an added bonus for Rochester to say, we figured it out. We got it in three, right? That makes a big difference.
From a prospect standpoint, obviously, you know, we start with Levi. And from a team standpoint, it was clearly led last night by two from Yops and another from Clegg. He scores 3 third period goals in the series, mm-hmm. and he leads all playoff performers right now in goals and points. So those are veterans. But looking at it from a prospect standpoint, how do you evaluate, accentuate, you know, what we saw over 3 wins here and moving forward?
Well, I mean, this is the AHL playoffs. It's not easy. So Jiří Kulík goes down to Rochester after pretty much a full season or close to a full season in Buffalo. And, you know, he did score a goal in game 2 off the power play one timer. It was great. He had an assist in the game last night. That's good. There's some moments in the game, a couple of turnovers, and Levi bailed him out a couple of times. But that's why Kulík being in Rochester is a learning curve right now. You know, they debated world championship AHL playoffs. And I think right now, with this first round win, just the fact that he's experiencing it and learning is important. But he had a couple of moments in the game where you're like, okay, Jiří, that you cannot mismanage the puck like this. But his talent, he had 5 shots on goal. He got himself in position to be able to produce, and he had the assist. One guy that I've been happy to see, and we talked to Michael Leone about him on Wednesday, is Konstantelainis. I think Konstantelainis looked good in his first playoffs with the Rochester Americans, first year in the AHL. Mm-hmm. He's still a very young player, but he did have another assist yesterday, and he's looked pretty good. I've been impressed with Konstantelainis' ability to respond physically. And I did not know that he was a rat. Michael Leone goes, he's got a little Brad Marchand in him, and he's a little bit of a rat. When you push him, he pushes back. And I'm happy that now I'm discovering this in this playoff series.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, in a series like this, you can go through the lineup top to bottom and, you know, acknowledge all who took part, including last night, Brännström coming in for the first time mm-hmm. as he replaced Komarov on the blue line. You had up front Wahlberg returning, making his series debut. Rusek was out due to injury, so not many missteps along the way. An awful lot of shot blocks. Michael Leone said probably the most from his group in this series than what they had in any segment over the course of the regular season. So that in itself can help lead to, you know, the zeros against. I mean, Devin Levi did get the game puck last night, but in Leone's postgame presser, it was all about everybody in front of him and the effort there. So
a couple of funny moments in the game, though, for yesterday. One, Devin Levi had to do a somersault outside of his crease. And I think everybody that's kind of tuned in with what Rochester's doing on social media, they must have seen it or through the highlight pack. But, you know, Devin has a routine. He makes a save. He's got to get out of the crease, especially when there's a scrum. So he tries to get out to the right side. One time he stepped on the stick, almost fell. The other time he was tangled and he ended up doing a somersault, which was kind of comical. The Rochester fans that were in Syracuse cheered loudly for that. The other thing is Fiddler Schultz took a bit of an errant stick in the face on a goal celebration.
Yes, I noticed that.
And I know
live.
You noticed that. So Fiddler Schultz gets into the celebration.
Weird
takes
thing
a
was,
knob
it wasn't
right
the
in
jab,
the face.
Though. It was a parallel stick at shoulder level. He ran into the
butt end.
Of it.
He ran into the white butt end and his head went back like, oh, again, I'm a child. I think these are all funny moments in the game. Yeah. And these are things that guys will look at the highlight pack and they'll do video. And, you know, the coach is going to say, go, show goals. And then, you know, they're going to put that on the video. And these are the moments I remember as a player, mm-hmm. these funny clips that they would put in. So that's mm-hmm. why I still remember to this day, we were in the playoffs. We scored a goal. And, you know, producer Joe Pinter back then, and, you know, Eric was our director probably, scanned the crowd. And there's Les Kuntar. He was our CCM co-rep. And he's in the crowd and he's chugging a beer after a goal. And you're like, Les is in the crowd. Like we put that on the video, put that on the playoff video. Like these moments are fun.
Well, they're not fun for the Los Angeles Kings as we transition to the Stanley Cup playoffs. And by the way, Shayna Goldman at the bottom of the hour. And as importantly, Bandits game one tonight of the NLL semifinals. Mm-hmm. Banditland comes alive at 7:30. Vancouver is in best of three. Game one tonight, game two in Vancouver on Sunday. But the Kings, Marty, how about this? So there are so many ways you can go with this.
How about this? Yeah. They lost.
Okay, but they always lose. They've lost to Edmonton historically since Gretzky's 1989 debut with the Kings in the playoffs against Edmonton. But it had me looking, because we talked the other day about Evander Kane and his dominance against LA.
Yeah.
In the history of the Stanley Cup playoffs, this is not Edmonton specific. This is all skaters ever against the LA Kings in the postseason. Number one, Leon Draisaitl.
Yes.
20 goals in 24 games. Quiet last night. Esa Tiikkanen is number two. Glenn Anderson is number three. Jari Kurri is tied for third. And Evander Kane is fifth. And Zach Hyman is sixth. It's all Oilers dominating the Kings historically. And man, it's hard to run from that when you got
Evander Kane
was
great last night. Evander Kane, as you pointed out, like how his dominance against the Kings, he was fantastic last night in the game. Yeah. And their depth showed up and whatnot. That was great. So it's funny because we put it on social media, but OptaStat said that the Kings are only the second team in the big major four sports to lose in the first round against the same opponent 4 years in a row. Mm-hmm. You mentioned yesterday, and I talked about the Sabres, right? And, you know, they're in the playoffs, and because of the division, not being able to get out of the first round or second round because it was Boston, Montreal. Mm-hmm. Well, the Boston Bruins lost to the Canadiens in the opening round four times in a row in 84, 85, 86, and 87. Yep. They're the only two teams to have done that. Somebody hit me on social media and said, wait a second, didn't the Sabres lose to the Bruins four times in a row too? And
Not in a row.
It was two times in the first round in 88 and 89, I believe that was. But yeah, that's how rare it is that a team can do that 4 years in a row. And the Oilers done that 4 years in a row with the Kings.
And it goes back to the point of, okay, well, why did it happen? Because of a poor playoff format. You have to get away from this because it's not, I don't think it's good for anybody to see the same matchup over and like, if you work your way towards it, yes. Like if you get to a second round or a third round, you know, and it's like, oh my gosh, we're meeting again. Okay, that's where the journey took you. But these situations that you maybe would like to see a little bit more flair. And I get it. Like it's sports. People are going to have an opinion and be able to present their argument one way or the other. That's the nature of it. But
you have to be able to change your opinion too. Don't be so stubborn. And that's a message to me, because for years I was like, I love the divisional playoffs because I grew up with the Adams division, Nordiques Hartford, Nordiques Buffalo, right. Nordiques Montreal, right?
And Boston. Buffalo couldn't beat Quebec either. That was a big problem.
That was a big problem. So, that's why I grew up with that. So I'm like, that's great. And now I'm like, you know what? No, I want 1 through 8. And to be honest with you, I would say you win your division, you're in the playoffs. And after that, it's the other six best teams. It's not like the top three in each division are guaranteed. And then there's two wild cards. I'm saying win your division, that guarantees you. And then after that, if there's two from the Atlantic and six from the Metro, then so be it. I say you take the other six best team, so you get the best eight.
Yeah, I mean, and again, what enters the conversation is massaging the schedule to increase the importance of regular season games and have an equal number, if you will. It's harder in the West, obviously, more time zones. But, you know, in the East, it's like, well, what's the real difference here between the Atlantic and the Metro? They're all in the same time zone. So why are they playing? You know what I mean? Like, why are you playing a smaller amount and but you used the word you grew up. Well, so did the NHL. Like the NHL grew from having 16 out of 21 make it to all of a sudden having 32 teams. And they grew and they changed and they had top eight in the conference back in a time when they had six divisions. Now they're back down to four. I think the growth was correct in doing it 1 through 8. Like that's a more fair and balanced and less scripted springtime. You know, I think you have a greater possibility, especially when new teams enter the fray. Like, I just think it's really, that's kind of why a lot of people will still fall back to 1 versus 16 and say,
yeah,
you never knew what you were going to get.
I don't like that. But look, okay, this year you would have gotten Washington and Montreal 1-8. That's fine. Yeah. But you would have got Toronto and New Jersey. And would I have missed the Battle of Ontario? Absolutely. I thought that was fun. But if we get Battle of Ontario next year again and Battle of Ontario the year after again, then you get a little bored of the Battle of Ontario. You got it one time.
Well, you could have gotten Ottawa because you've never won it and never will.
Exactly. Tampa would have played the Ottawa Senators and Carolina would have played Florida. It would have been different. Would it have been worse? No, it would have been different.
Different, yeah.
And I don't mind that now that I've experienced LA, Edmonton 4 years in a row. And
do you want to save the Edmonton next round opponent with Vegas for the Shayna talk at the bottom?
Yeah, that'd be great. Yes.
So Edmonton defeats LA, Vegas moves on as well, and they defeat Minnesota. So I made a few bold / ridiculous predictions, hopes for the first round.
Like Minnesota.
One of my hopes was that Minnesota would somehow ride the, and I can't even believe that I'm saying that because obviously I picked Vegas all the time to do everything good. And last night they had everything good. They had Aiden Hill. They had Mark Stone. They had Jack Eichel. They had unsung hero Braden McNabb. They had Shea Theodore at his best. Like, Vegas looks like Vegas when they win games like that. And even still, it was still close to the bitter end.
Yeah, and Minnesota has been good. Maybe Minnesota came down to, and I hate to say it, maybe it came down to a Philip Gustafson illness because he was so good in game 5 that, I mean, if he stays in and Fleury doesn't go in, not that it was Fleury's fault. Fleury made some good saves and the goal by Howden in overtime was a laser over the glove, but who knows what would have happened, right? And I'm like, maybe it came down to an illness. Minnesota battled hard, but Vegas was Stanley Cup champions, Vegas Golden Knights last night, the way they played, the way they controlled pace of the game. Early in the series, we were like, where's Eichel? Where's Stone? Where's Eichel? Where's Stone? They're looking like they're they were so good in that game.
Isn't it something when you watch elite players like Jack? Well, the pass is elite, obviously, but the finish and the poise by Jack, like, it's easy to look back after the fact, after it goes in, but then when you look at the mechanics and the poise of how it was, it's like,
it almost looked so easy.
Yeah.
When he got the puck and got in and pulled it to the forehand, and it was like, that looks so easy,
so
effortless, easy.
Yep.
And then you got Mark Stone, who scores a goal, batting it in the air, and he celebrates like it's game 7 of the Stanley Cup. And I love that. Like, Mark Stone has that joy of playing. And when it's not going well, you see it on his face. He's disappointed in himself. And then he feels the wave of emotions. And last night was the good side of the wave for him.
So what about Minnesota? I mean, I guess we could have phrased it for both. And we can do that now. Like, what now? What next for both the Kings and the Wild? Because, so I kind of made an off-the-cuff comment yesterday, probably being a little too critical of LA and maybe paint it exact. Yeah, like, they're not old by the rest of the team's standards in the playoffs. Like, right now, 29 plus or minus half a year is the average age of almost all the teams in the mix.
Yes.
Toronto is just over 30. Edmonton is 30.6, but everybody else is right around 29 to 29.5. Mm-hmm. That's just the way it is. The Kings are slightly below that, but the reason the comment came out, obviously, Kopitar and Doughty. Mm-hmm. And Kopitar ends the series as a top 10 scorer again with 9 points in 6 games.
Doughty had some rough moments.
But realistically, you can't keep expecting Kopitar to do this, and it didn't translate into dominance and or victory. So they need more. So between them, the Kings, not having won a series since 2014 when they won the Stanley Cup, and Minnesota not having won a series since 2015, which is now a decade, like, what is next for these two? The Wild do finally get out from under the Parisian suitor contract.
Yeah, that's $14.5 million, almost $15 million that's coming
because
off.
Because they still have minimal thing. So they it's a plus 13 million for each of the next
they
2 years
that under they haven't had to work 2 million with. Of dead cap next year, but they had over like 16 million this year. So it is a big step for them, for Bill Guerin, to be able to say, okay, we've got the structure, we'll add. We got the players. You know, they had Steve Bouillon played this year in the playoffs. Yeah. He's going to be a full-time next year. Brock Faber is young. They've got the pieces. They're going to have Jesper Wallstedt backing up Filip Gustavsson next year, moving in from Fleury. Kaprizov, Eriksson Ek, Boldy,
Rossi. Well, Kaprizov needs an extension, so that's probably the first order of business. How much is he going to get?
He's going to get it. He's going to get probably $12.5 million, I would think. I didn't look at the, AFP analytics numbers on it, which were done at Christmas. I'm looking forward to see at the end
go
of the year when
gut.
They're 12.5 to 13.
Okay, thank you.
Would you think that would be fair?
Well, I think he's got leverage to go higher, honestly.
Potentially.
I mean, if you're telling me that Marner is going to get X, Kaprizov, is he going to play the waiting game? He doesn't need to rush into it because he has a contract for next year. Is he going to let the market through Marner get dictated? Correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard Kaprizov's name in the Hart Trophy more than I've ever heard Mitch Marner's.
Yes, and Kaprizov was like an early favorite at the start of the year, then the injury.
Right.
And maybe it's 13.5. And you're right, because also he has another year left at $9 million next year. So, you know, you're looking at in 2 years from now, the cap being $100+ million. Do you want to go? Okay, so if you say you're 14% of the cap, that's 14 million, right? I mean, Mitch Marner is going to have his contract done before Kaprizov does, because Marner needs a contract for next year. So that will be that will lead the way for Kirill Kaprizov. But you were talking about the Edmonton Oilers, Edmonton Oilers, the LA Kings.
In Minnesota. Like, what do each do next?
So here's the thing. Well, I've mentioned it on the show. I think the Kings have to look at their coaches and Jim Hiller and say, what are we doing here? Now, Mike Sullivan.
Right. It's obviously roster too. It has to be roster. Like,
yeah, but the problem here is Jim Hiller was so stubborn at not playing the young guys, especially in the playoffs. What happened yesterday in game 6 against the Edmonton Oilers? Oh, you know what? Brent Clark scores a goal. He was playing like 4 minutes a game as a sixth defenseman or whatever. Jordan Spence scored a goal with the fourth line on the ice. They played only 7 minutes. You need to be able to trust everybody when you coach. And right now, Jim Hiller did not trust everybody. He trusted Doughty and Kopitar a lot. Doughty had one of the biggest gaffes in what I think would be in his career. It's 4-2. The Oilers, you know, it's in the second. There's still time. And it's a 3-on-1 with two back checkers. And I believe it was Connor Brown has a back checker off his back. Doughty decides, I'm going to slide to try to take the pass away. And he leaves Trent Frederick open in the slot. And Connor Brown still gets it there. I'm like, Drew, you got to read the play. Mm-hmm. Like, Connor Brown wasn't a threat. You got to be able to stay in the middle there. And maybe he was tired. Maybe he was mentally tired. He made a gaffe on there, and he opened up the middle of the ice for Trent Frederick.
Interesting angle there by you with the coach and young players. You have to respect, and I'm not saying you don't. You do have to respect how they had one of the best seasons in Kings history.
Yes.
And that was, again, by following the same script, which was trusting veteran defensemen, which they were not going to move off of, obviously, which is what limited Brant Clark throughout the course of the year. Mm-hmm. But he leans on the Edmondsons and the Gavrikovs of the world. But moving forward, Gavrikov's a UFA. He's been very good as an LA King. There's no question about that. He's been very good after coming over from Columbus. But will they choose to go a little younger? Like, they have two more years of Doughty. Mikey Anderson still fits in incredibly well at a very awesome cap hit. But yeah, they were a top five defensive team. So clearly they weren't going to make too many changes. But you're also correct in saying, like, yeah, that's fine. It got you to the series. But in the series, you need to make adjustments. And the unfortunate reality is for the Kings is it was almost like mind games, or you're living in two different situations constantly if you're Jim Hiller. His team scored first all the time. His team had leads all the time. So it's not like you were sitting there like in these uphill slugfests for the final four games, right? You could see the things that work for them. Now they have to figure out how to prevent and or avoid Edmonton altogether, right? Like, it's just, I don't know. It's tough. I don't.
You got a tank to be in the wild card so you can avoid Edmonton, and then it just so happened you're going to end up playing them anyway. But
like, what are they going to do up front? Like, what? How do you? We love Quentin Byfield, but he's a $6.2 million player for the next 3 years. So you can hope that Byfield emerges into superstar status at $6.2 million at some point over the next 3 years.
And you're getting a major value on that.
But the reality is you actually need like superstar power, I think.
I feel like their roster up front is not that bad. Fiala,
but
Kempe.
He's not a superstar. That's what I'm saying.
Like, I know.
He had a career year. So.
They were good. They were good up front. They just didn't trust that they could go and run four line. I remember this as early as playing peewee hockey. And coaches always say, guys, you know, either we had more numbers. You know, in peewee and Bantam, sometimes you play against a team that's got two lines and an extra forward and four defensemen. And the coach is like, when we get to the third period, we're going to be more fresh. We're going to be more fresh because we have more bodies.
When do kids ever run out of energy? That's terrible speak at that age.
That was great because it worked all the time. I remember us coming back and winning all the time. Or even when I was, you know, playing for Torts in New York or playing for Lindy, we're going to be the best conditioned team. We're going to win games in the third period. We're going to come back. We're going to be rolling lines and all of it. The LA Kings were the picture, the poster of the, hey, you know what? You got a lead in the third period, but the Edmonton Oilers somehow, even though they have the two best players in the world, trusted the Janmark, the Connor Brown, the Adam Henrique, the Evander Kane to be able to play a bigger role. Mm-hmm. And so now the Oilers in the third period, they let loose of McDavid, let loose of Draisaitl, and the LA Kings are tired. And they got tired every game in the third period.
Yeah, it's, I guess, lastly, real quick, the reason I phrased it like what next for Minnesota and LA. If a superstar were on the market, which of those two teams would the superstar choose to join? Minnesota or LA?
Man, I think Minnesota is a better team. If I'm looking at like the future, Rossi, Boldy, Faber,
all
of it, Kaprizov. I'm looking at the future. I'm looking at Minnesota. Minnesota had to navigate through years now of hell with their dead cap and the buyout of Parise and Suter. Mm-hmm. $15 million that you don't have. And you have to kind of just go along with it.
Right.
They did a masterful job of being able to at least be in the picture. I would, if it's me, I'm picking Minnesota.
The good discussion, though, to have, like, just randomly pick two teams, right, for the next few days or whatever, and just, like, pair them up, match them up, and see where you think that opinion would fall. Because Minnesota and LA have great parallels here over the last decade, which is no series wins. Mm-hmm. However, LA at least got their two before entering this drought, and Minnesota's never been able to get through. They came so close early on in their existence getting to the conference final.
And then you have Carolina, who's completely flipped the switch because they always win the first round. Remember Carolina years ago? It was, we don't make the playoffs, but when we do, we go to the finals and we win the cup. Like, they would get to the finals, miss the playoffs 4 years, get to the finals, miss the playoffs. Now they make the playoffs. They can't get to the finals, but they win a round. Yeah. You could pick teams that have done that now, winning around. Same thing. And Carolina would be one of them. But do you want to go to Carolina or Minnesota?
Right.
Almost got to say Minnesota, because I think Minnesota is more prime to compete for a cup.
There's a game 6 tonight. There's a game 7 tomorrow. There is a game 1 of the National Lacrosse League semifinals tonight in Banditland. 7:30 at KeyBank Center. Can't wait to see you there. Bandits.com/tickets. It is Buffalo, Vancouver, front end of a best of 3. Game 2 happens on Sunday in Vancouver. Buffalo eyeing the three-peat still. Can they get it done on home floor tonight against the Warriors? We'll see you in Bandit Land, and we'll see you with Shayna Goldman on the other side here on Sabres Live.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Want to travel like a savvy jet setter? No, that doesn't mean monogramming your passport. It means making smart decisions every step of your trip, which means knowing your options. Smart Travel unpacks the facts, like which booking sites actually save money, how to fly first class using points, and if that fancy travel card is a smart investment, all so you can save more on your next adventure. Follow Smart Travel from NerdWallet today and start traveling like a pro.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through two cartons in one day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
We have the great luxury of having Shayna Goldman guest with us every week here on Sabres Live. I feel like our show is less cruel to the hosts and the guests than the Stanley Cup playoffs can be. Think of just Colin Blackwell for a moment and the highs and the lows that have been experienced for this individual, from an OT winner to an agonizing own goal off, fired off of his own teammate in Sam Steele, and then off of him and into the net. Shayna, welcome in. Obviously, we have one Game 7 on the docket already because of the chaos that happened last night in Colorado and Dallas.
I know. I'm so glad. I went into last night going, please give us one or two Game 7s, not just because I don't want to write previews, because Game 7s are the best. And I think a lot of these series have been total bangers. I think Minnesota-Vegas has been one of the best series that we've seen in round one. I wanted the extra game. I want the overtime. So that bad luck by the Stars is going to benefit everyone that's not a Stars fan right now. I'm very sorry, Dallas. But, hey, you have to be good to win the Stanley Cup, but you also have to be lucky, right? It's you don't want to be lucky to be good, but it's good to be lucky.
Who do you got? Just because I had Colorado winning the cup against the Tampa Bay Lightning. And it almost happened that both my teams making it to the finals were going to be out in the first round. I'm still believing in Colorado, but it's hard to watch them, just the highs and the lows and the highs and the lows, and Dallas the same way. So do you think it's going to be the same thing in Game 7?
Well, I'm biased because I had the same exact Stanley Cup final as
you. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And you know, it's so risky because you're picking the two best-on-best series essentially on each side of the bracket in round one, and you could lose everything. I kind of thought the Stars were going to take it in six last night. Like, going to Game 6, I'm like, if the Stars are going to win this series, they're going to close this out. if the Avs are going to win this series, obviously you have to win two straight. But I kind of like their chances now in seven, which I was not feeling going into that game at all. I felt like, you know what, Dallas has done enough to swing the momentum their way. But I think that there is one interesting trend emerging, and it's kind of similar to the regular season. The Stars came into the playoffs on a complete and total low, right? Since the Four Nations break there, their expected goal numbers were some of the worst in the league, and a lot of it was because of their defense. And obviously, without Haskinen in the lineup, they're forcing guys like Labushkin and CC to play minutes that nobody should ever want them to play. And that right side of the lineup is really challenging. And then the numbers, they kept winning until the end of the season, they went on a losing streak. When they came into this series, their 5-on-5 numbers were some of the best that they've been in a very long time, right? And that was really encouraging for the Stars. Not just that you're a better 5-on-5 team, but you're doing it against the Avs. You're holding your own. The last three games, I think it is now, we're seeing their numbers start to go in the wrong direction again, and the Avs start to control play a little bit more and dominate them at 5-on-5. Hasn't always worked out on the score sheet, obviously, as Game 5 shows you, but you see the numbers hurting the Stars in 4 and now Game 6. So I am curious if they can get their 5-on-5 game back together, or if it's going to be similar to the regular season where you see those numbers start taking off and then the results follow.
I am fully aware that typically history does not mean a lick tomorrow. These are different teams, and one can reasonably assume a different type of game and different result. However, Pete DeBoer is 8-0 in game sevens. No one, player, coach, goalie, has ever won 9 game sevens, let alone go 9-0. Is Pete DeBoer the X factor tomorrow?
No, I'm going to say no. The X factor is that Roope Hintz and Mikko Rantanen found their chemistry and are absolutely crushing it together with a four-point period. I know, but that second period, you go, okay, this is a good sign, right? I think in game 5, you got your good sign of Wyatt Johnston scoring goals again, because he got to a slower start than I thought he would have in the postseason, especially after what he did last year. But the X factor is going to be, can Mikko Rantanen and Roope Hintz do it again? Not can Pete DeBoer coach his way into this? Because, I mean, honestly, how is he going to do that, right? It's
I don't know.
I don't see how he could in this moment. Coaches, you know, like, what adjustments are you going to make up front or on the back end? Like, if you're inserting Miro Haskinen, you're making some coaching adjustments, right? You're changing your lineup up. Mm-hmm. But who among us wouldn't want to have that luxury?
Right.
We could have another game 7 on Sunday, depending on what happens between the Jets and the St. Louis Blues tonight. It's in St. Louis, 8 o'clock Eastern puck drop. Well, probably 8:15 or whatnot, but
probably like 8:50.
Okay. Yeah, there's no games before that, and they'll delay it until 8:45 anyway. Mark Scheifele not in the lineup. He got rocked a couple. Oh, love to rock the Fasca. Fasca, whatever, that clip that George sent us in our group chat. I'll share it with you. But he's not going to be in, but Nick Ehlers looked like he's coming back. Can the Jets survive without their number one center? And they didn't acquire a second-line center this year. They went with Namestnikov. So now you have Namestnikov, Lowry, and that's it in the middle, really. Like, that's tough for the Jets.
Oh, yeah, and you know, the decision not to get a 2C was really interesting because you look at how everyone around them in the Central got better, right? Like, the Blues didn't have to make big swings because they did enough in the offseason and the coaching change and the vibes, and they're in a different position than the 1-2-3 in the Central Division. So I think it hurt them not only that they didn't, but a lot of their opponents did. So if they're going to, you know, move on from here, that hole is going to be glaring. The 2C position, as it wasn't perfect. So now that you're even more shorthanded, because you didn't know how these guys were going to respond to a postseason environment anyway, right? Like, that's been the narrative forever for the Jets. And, like, I hate to just carry the same one year after year, but there's good reason to. Mark Scheifele and Kyle Connor have been great in this series, right? Mm-hmm. The whole thing going into game 3 was, can the Blues contain them? And if they can't, is their season over? So now you're going to be without them, and that's going to be really crushing. Yes, Namestnikov and Kyle Connor connect for a goal in game 5. Maybe they can do that again. But they're asking a lot of someone who's more of a utility guy, right? Like, not to knock him. Yeah. It's a different role. Can they do it without him? There's two key questions, right? Is Ehlers back, and what does he look like in a postseason environment? Because if you're going to look at any Jets forward and carry that narrative, it is around Nikolaj Ehlers, because he is so good and so effective in the regular season to the point where everyone's always clamoring for him to play more, right? Get more meaningful minutes, get power play one time, and there's good reason behind it. But in the postseason, it hasn't translated yet. So what is he bringing to the lineup now that he's healthy? And is he healthy enough to be in the lineup or be effective? The other part of it is Connor Hellebuck. Can you get the goaltending support to make up for what you don't have offensively?
So who wins the series, St. Louis or Winnipeg?
I think if the Jets are winning it, they have to win it tonight. They have to close it out. If not, I don't like their chances. And it's the same thing with the Avs. So it's, again.
So well, you, sorry. So who wins Dallas, Colorado?
I say, now there's going seven, I'm going to say it's the Avs. So I'm going to go the same way with the Blues. If the Jets can close it out tonight, it's theirs. If not, it's going to go. And is that opposite? Did I screw that up?
I think maybe, but I'm not going to dwell on it. That's fine. Who's going to win?
You have
Vegas?
Colorado, and if Winnipeg doesn't win tonight, St. Louis in seven. That's basically the scenario.
No, wait, I'm the same. No, it is the same. I swear. Whoever wins game six is winning.
Okay, that's not what I'm asking. Who's going to win the series, St. Louis or Winnipeg?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It depends.
It depends on tonight, Duffer. Follow
along. If the Jets close it out tonight, it is theirs. If it's going seven, the Blues are doing
it. Are you betting on in the Derby tomorrow?
I am
hedging. Hedging.
I'm not betting on anybody tonight, okay?
Vegas and Edmonton then. This is simple. We have not even played a game. Who's going to win that series?
Vegas is winning this series. You cannot let the Golden Knights get hot, and the Golden Knights got hot at the right time against Minnesota. I think the Wild did a very good job containing the Golden Knights' best, and it took some lineup adjustments to get Jack Eichel going. I think it took a lot of pressure off him to put William Karlsson on his line to get that two-way support. I didn't think Eichel was going to need that, but I guess when you look how stacked that top line for Minnesota was, it makes sense. So if Edmonton keeps Draisaitl and McDavid on the same line, and at this point, why wouldn't they? Because that's what got them past the Kings in round one. That was a key part of it. It does make sense in a way to say, okay, Vegas can keep that stacked top line for them, three shutdown talents, and see what happens. And then they have the depth, I think. Then you go to the, you know, the bottom nines, and I like Vegas' chances better. I like their blue line better, and I like their forward group better. Obviously, I like Aiden Hill better than the Oilers' goaltending. Low bar there. But I don't even know if like the matchup comes to that exactly because of the advantages in front of the blue paint.
Right, but Lovar Pickard is 4-0. This is worth
noting. He is 4-0, giving up a bad goal in every game pretty much, but they still survive it, so whatever. So Stuart Skinner is like, I've given up bad goals too, but I don't win games when I give up bad goals. But Shayna, nobody really cares about that in the States, but we do have some Canadian audience, you know, across the, you know, across the river and all the way into Toronto. I was asked this morning, who has the best chance out of the Canadian teams remaining to win the Stanley Cup? Because now Ottawa and Montreal are out, so it's Toronto, Edmonton, and potentially Winnipeg. I answered the Winnipeg Jets, knowing that they're not even through the first round yet. I just don't see Toronto beating Florida, and I don't see the Oilers beating Vegas. Am I crazy to think Winnipeg, even though they're not true, would be the best chance?
I don't think you're crazy because I kind of do feel like if the Jets can get past round one and Hellebuck can settle in with a series win, I think he's going to round back into form. Like, I don't understand the situation. I'm going to dig my heels in and say he is better than this. So I like that pick, but I am going to go different than you. The Jets would be my number two team, but I'm going to go Edmonton as my number one team because I think the coaching game, I want to give Chris Knobloch a lot of credit, and I like what they talked about. They didn't care about the regular season. Just get to the playoffs, and now it's business for them. And I guess when you go to the Stanley Cup final the year before, you can think that way, right? Because you're like, it doesn't matter. Get past the 82 games, and then we know what to do when it matters most. And I think they do, and I again, as I'm insulting their back end, and I am, and their goaltending – I think that they figured out a way to get that forward group clicking in a way that they needed. So I would bet on them, but I just don't see it going to a Canadian team.
So who's winning Florida, Toronto, and who's winning Carolina, Washington?
I'm going to go with Panthers for sure. I think we overestimated the Lightning and underestimated the Panthers. Two things can be true. And you look at all the injuries and it explains the Lightning's performance. But I also think we had not seen a Florida Panthers team at full strength with Marchand, Seth Jones, Aaron Ekblad, all in the fold. Oh, and Matthew Tkachuk. So they're firing on all cylinders. I think their depth is such a weapon. I think it's different for the Leafs to contain the Senators versus containing the Panthers, who are going to frustrate them to no end. I give that one to the Panthers. Kane's Caps is a little bit trickier for me. With Frederik Andersen healthy, I like the Kane's chances a lot better than I did with Kochetkov in net. I know he had a good regular season. I didn't like his play down the stretch, though, and I didn't love his play against the Devils. But I don't want to underestimate the Capitals either. I'm going to give it to them. I think that they have a really deep forward group, and now that they have Protas back, they have another weapon. And they had no weak links on defense. The Ferravari injury does change that for them. So now I think the Canes' blue line and back end stacks up a lot better to them. But Logan Thompson looks like the Logan Thompson we saw all season, right? Up until the end of the year. So I'm going to go Washington with the smallest of edges. But please give me Game 7. Please. I want a long series. I want to enjoy this. Stop rushing everything.
Okay. Because you mentioned Florida, and we talked about Nick Ehlers and Toronto advancing. There's three UFAs on those teams. There's Sam Bennett, there's Mitch Marner, and there's Nick Ehlers. I understand they won't get the same money, but for what is projected and what they may be able to fetch on the open market, which one of those three do you see a better fit for the Buffalo Sabres if they were to say we need to add in a top six role on the wing?
I think Sam Bennett is staying in Florida. Like, I don't think they're going to let him go anywhere. I think the wingers, you have a better chance of seeing go elsewhere. If you have to go head-to-head and pick one, it's going to be Mitch Marner. He's the better fit because he's the better player, right? Like, he is more of a game-breaker on the wing. He brings a lot of two-way strength. I think he could help the Sabres in all three zones, in all situations. Like, he is what you need. He's everything and more. And he instantly jumps out to be the number one winger on this team. It knocks everybody down into better spots, and I think that's great for everyone. With Ehlers, he's a very good player, and I really like him. But does he have what it takes in the postseason is going to be a good question, because once the Sabres get to the playoffs, right, and they break through in that way, now you need difference makers in the playoffs. And I would worry about that a little bit. And I also think that when you have players going to unrestricted free agency, they're already in a different age range than that, like, ideal prime that you're looking for players, right? Mm-hmm. So if you're going for two players who are currently in their prime and then you're going to sign them into their 30s, you need someone that starts at a higher level, because as they age, that's going to, like, you know, that level might come down and be below average relative to their heights, but it's going to be above average relative to the average forward, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I think that you get that longevity more so from Marner because he has that higher starting point.
100%. Shanna, thank you. Enjoy the weekend. And here's to getting two game sevens to watch.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
Baseball's all about the games, and the best in daily gaming is on the MLB app, where every day starts with new puzzles and challenges. Test your skills with MLB Pickle, the ultimate mystery player challenge, and Immaculate Grid, where stats and strategy collide. Or chase the $5.6 million jackpot and beat the streak, presented by BetMGM. And for an all-new spin on fantasy sports, there's Spinball. The game's official home for games is on the MLB app. MLB trademarks used with permission. No purchase necessary. Restrictions apply. For official rules, go to MLB.com/play/official rules.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Sabres Live in reverse. I'm going to act like it's the start of Monday's show and ask you, how are you? Because I don't even think I've asked you that the entire week.
Well, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm exhausted.
Let me ask you this.
From a career poor sleeper, I had one of the poorest sleeps ever last night. So if today's been a bad show, I'll take ownership.
It's been a great show. We have a minute left. Who do you got for the Selke Trophy? Barkov, Cirelli, and Sam Reinhart are the three finalists. I guess we only watch hockey in Florida.
I mean, it is the state of hockey. Wait a minute. That's fatigue creeping in. I'll go with Cirelli.
I think Barkov and Reinhart are going to steal some votes from one another. I think Cirelli is probably the hot. I think Barkov will win, but whatever. How about for the Bill Masterson Memorial Trophy?
Monahan.
So that's, I know Fleury's in, like, one of the finalists, and it's a great story, but Fleury's not going to win. Landeskog, 3 years coming back. But I think that it has to be Sean Monahan losing his good buddy, Johnny Gaudreau, and the impact that he had in Columbus. I could see Landeskog winning it, but I want to see Sean Monahan getting that.
And Draisaitl should win the Hart, in my opinion.
100%. I think that's going to be the top three guys.
Question is, who's going to win the Lindsay? It was vastly different than the Hart. Enjoy the weekend, folks. We'll see you on Monday.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.